Here's a word from...
Well, here's the man that Pat Buttram was sidekick to, oh, these many years. America's first singing cowboy, and I guess one of the richest men in America, right, Pat?
Yes, he is.
Oh, what I read. Here's Gene Autry.
Yes. Yeah.
I heard all this noise out here about Moody. I wish I could afford to buy one of those suits.
Yeah. Tell you, you better watch out, Moody. He'll try and melt you down.
Yeah, he's got a lot of gold around his neck, I'll say that.
You were voted for 2 years in a row, though, the best dressed. Wasn't he, Pat?
He was one of the 10 best dressed men in America. How many years? Couple of years?
Oh, I'm not that old. Well, I like to wear loud clothes. In fact, Moody's made a lot of loud clothes for me. And I always thought that the place to wear the real loud clothes was when you were on the stage or out in the arena performing for the public. But I always thought that if you were a businessman and you were going to conduct business, well, I thought I was better off to dress as a businessman should.
Yeah.
And that's where
money all over you.
No, no money. No money at all.
Pardon me, Moody.
Gene, who do you think is the most sloppiest dresser cowboy in America?
The most sloppy?
Yeah.
I think Buttram is. Well, I tell you, I've known Slim when he looked sloppy out there fighting those bulls and rodeos. I've known Slim a long time.
I bet you can't remember the first place that you ever saw me or I saw you where we met.
Well, Slim, I've known you so long that I don't...
I remember it perfectly.
What was it, Slim?
At the stockyards here in Los Angeles, right after the war, and I was on an old bull called Squarehead, and he bucked me off the first jump, and he was still jumping up and down on me when the whistle blew. And somebody slapped him in the face with a pair of chaps. He didn't have a clown and bullfighter. And I crawled out from under him and run to the fence, and I crawled the fence and looked over the fence, and there sat Gene, and he's laughing at me. He's sitting there with Abe Lefton, and they thought it was funny as heck, and I didn't see nothing funny about it at all.
Abe Lefton, he was one of the greatest announcers I think that's ever been, Merv, and I always said that there was only two Jewish cowboys that I ever knew. One of them was Abe Lefton, and the other was Moody.
Were you always a cowboy all your life?
Well, I was born in Texas, went through high school there, and then I lived in Oklahoma for a number of years. My father was a livestock dealer, so I was reared practically on a horse. I've been on a horse all my life, practically, but I gave that up. We used to take the cattle to the railroads to ship them off to the market, like to Fort Worth or Kansas City market. And waiting for the train to come in so we could load the cattle out and hang out around the station. And I guess I was like every kid about that age. I was only about 16 years old. So I listened to those dots and dashes on the telegraph instrument, and I wanted to know what they said. So I took up telegraphy. I set up a key and a sounder and started working out on dots and dashes, and I learned to be a telegraph operator.
But isn't that where you were discovered as singing?
Yes, that's right. I used to have a guitar around the office all the time, and I would sing and play the guitar for my own amusement, more or less. And a fellow came in one night to send a telegram, and he heard me singing. He said, "You know," said, "young fellow," said, "you ought to get yourself a job on the radio." And I thought he was just trying to make me feel good or something of that sort. And I took the telegram and read it and looked at it, and it was going to King Features Syndicate, and it was signed Will Rogers. And that was my first introduction to the show. That's right. Yes, that's correct.
My word. You never got the girl in the movies, did you, Gene?
No, they always...
I mean, you kissed a lot of horses.
I kissed one girl once. And...
Did you? In the film or behind the film?
Well, in the film.
Good, yeah.
I kissed Ann Miller, and I couldn't pick a better one, I guess, than Ann Miller to kiss, because she was really a beautiful young lady. She had just had a very successful run in New York with a stage show, a great dancer. And
what did the fans say, though?
Well, that's exactly why that they decided that I'd better leave the kissing to someone else. I think they left that all up to Clark Gable and fellows like that at that time. They decided if I was going to kiss anything, it'd be the horse.
Yeah. You, John Wayne,
you hang around horses and sleep with them and ride them and with them all day. It's pretty hard to get a girl to come close to you.
Yeah. You ought to know. I got to tell you, I remember some of the most enjoyable days in my life were spent when we were out at the Warner Brothers Ranch, and it always struck me funny that there were slim pickings, and you'll meet Sheb Woolley in a few minutes, and Sheb, and they would pick us up at 6 o'clock in the morning. I was so excited working with these cowboys, but they rode out to the ranch in limousines, big Cadillacs, and they'd step out, and their dressers were there. But then we used to have great fun. The lunches, they'd bring them out, and we'd have like a picnic every day and sit around and laugh, and they'd laugh at me trying to get on the horse.
Well, you can't get on a horse as funny as a guy that I worked with in the picture. I worked with Jimmy Durante one time, and I never forgot the scene. He was supposed to be an attorney, and we had Barton working with me, Barton McLean, and a couple of heavies, so they'd stolen a horse. And Durante was the attorney that was going to defend him. So he calls up this Barton McLean. He says, "What's your name?" The guy says, "Jupiter." He says, "Ah, Jupiter. Jupiter, do you swear to tell the truth or nothing but the truth?" "Happy God." He says, "I do." He says, "Then we'll suck before we start." He says, then we had to get to this. He had to make a mount to get on a horse. And he got on him, but he wound up backwards. And I can't figure yet how he quite got on that in that place. But it was really a funny scene. He was the funniest guy to work with because he could never remember lines. He would just talk, and when he finished, well, then you'd start talking and try to match him up. At least Pat would give me the final cue, you know, where I could go there.
How many champions were there? Your horse's name was Champion, right?
Yes, that's right. I had three.
Well, he treated the horses better than me. He put Champion out the stud, and I'm still working.
Well, I guess you fellas would know better than anybody how many famous people came out of the group we're going to hear sing right now. I know that Roy Rogers once sang with this group.
That's correct.
You worked with him in what, 1936?
1936, I made a film in Dallas, Texas at the Texas Centennial. It was called The Big Show. And the Sons of the Pioneers worked with me in that picture, and Roy was one of the group, yes.
Ken Curtis, who plays Festus.
Yeah, Ken Curtis, Gospel. That's correct.
Pat yes. Brady.
And Pat and
extraordinary
Fisher.
Huh?
Fisher.
Right.
Yeah, she
was on Beverly Hillbillies.
And one of the fine writers that wrote Tumbling Tumbleweeds and Cool Water was Bob Nolan.
You betcha.
And oh yeah,
40 years they've been together.
They have been a great group, and I consider them one of the finest Western singing groups in the country today.
The Sons of the Pioneers.
All day I face the barren ways without the taste. The devil, not a man, and he spread the burning sand with water. Listen to him, Dan. He's a devil, not a man. And he spreads the burning sand with water.
Water.
Dan, can you see that green tree where the water's running free and it's waiting there for me and you?
The
shadows sway and seem to say, tonight we'll pray for water. Cool water. And way up there, he'll hear our prayer and show us where there's water.
Water. Water.
Clear.
Water.
Gene, do rodeos? Oh, you must have done rodeos.
Well, Madison Square Garden, we did for years and years. In fact, you're talking about riding horses. Now, Gene rode horses all of his life. He did great in pictures. But one time in Madison Square Garden, this packed Saturday night crowd paid $6.50 or $8 for their seats, and Gene rode out and fell off his horse, right?
Well, it didn't quite happen that way. I rode out in the...
Oh, no.
We rode out in the...
It looked that way from this end of it.
Yeah.
Old Gabby Hayes said to one time we was talking about Gene, and he says, back in the saddle again, back in the saddle again. Says, he spent half his life about that far out of the saddle.
Gene, they're cutting you up.
That don't make any difference. Huh? I love that once in a while. No, this night I rode out in Madison Square Garden. I used to ride out with white gloves on. And the horn of the saddle is silver polished and real polished up, you know. And these gloves were real cotton white. And I would ride out in the middle of the arena and ride the horse, and then I'd just step off with one hand on the horn. So when I started to step off with one hand on there, these cotton gloves just slid right off that horn, and I busted my fanny right out the middle of the arena. I usually always put rosin in the palm of my hand so it wouldn't slip off of there. But anyway, the most embarrassing part of it was Bing Crosby was there, and he saw me after the show, and he said, well, too bad, too bad. Said, you know, you wasn't in top voice tonight either. So that made it a little worse.
You were the first to fly a horse, weren't you?
Yes, I flew a horse in 1939 from Los Angeles to New York. I was doing a picture and had to be in New York, and we had about 3 days to shoot the picture. And Jack Fry was president of TWA at that time, and we were sitting over at the Roosevelt Hotel, and he was having a few drinks, and I said, well, I don't know how I'm going to get that horse back to New York. I said, I've got to get him back there. Jack Fry says, I'll fly him back for you. And I said, fair enough, fair enough.
Condition?
Well, I wasn't sure that he could get him back there. I wasn't sure that the horse could get on an airplane. So I sent a trainer that I had at that time was Johnny Agee. He had been a trainer with Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey for years and had trained old Tony for Mix. So he went out to the airport and took a cardboard and put it up against this door, then took a big black pencil and cut out a thing the size of the door in this DC-3 and brought it back, and we put it in the van. We found out that by leading the horse on the ramp up the stairs where his head and his withers could go in there first. If you put him on straight, he couldn't walk in that way. He had to walk up that way. So we flew the horse back to New York, and we made several stops. And the first place we stopped was in Albuquerque. And he shook his old head. I guess his ears were all stopped up. And they put on a crate of carrots for him. So every time the old horse would start shaking his hand and yawning, we'd start feeding him carrots. By the time he got to New York, he wouldn't eat oats anymore. But we had a lot of fun on that trip.
I think I got on that plane a couple of times. They kept using that for an excuse.
It's amazing, though, that of all of the singing you did in your cowboy days, that the biggest hit record you ever had nothing to do with being a cowboy song or the West.
Well, actually, the three biggest records I had didn't have anything to do with the West, or even hillbilly songs. I had some pretty good hillbilly songs like You Are My Sunshine and South of the Border, but the biggest record I ever had was Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
That's so what? How many?
Well, Last year was its 20th year, and we sold 300,000 of it last year, and it sold 7 million up to now. So I hope it'll sell 300,000 more this year, too, Chubb. I can use it.
Yeah, I know you need it.
Is he a big spender, Pat?
Big. Oh, yeah. Look, people said to me, used to say, Archer can't sing or act or ride. I said, he can add.
Great cowboy.
Who, Gibson?
Gibson was a great cowboy. And Maynard was a great roper, great trick roper. He's a great trick rider.
Were they good, were they good, really, with the guns?
Some of them was. Some of them were very good.
Do you remember Bob Kayson?
Yeah.
He was an employee from Oklahoma.
Left-handed.
Yeah, I know him.
When he missed you, he'd knock you down when he'd swing like this.
Who's that?
Kayson.
Oh, yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
He was good. Yak was a good cowboy, too. Huh? It was Yak Montanath.
Oh, yeah.
He was one of the greatest cowboys, I think, that I've known in my... I know he was the greatest stuntman that I ever knew during my career.
Well, this our next guest is one of the most famous Western stars in Hollywood, but you won't recognize his name, and you won't recognize his face, because he's the fast draw champion of the West, whose hip and gun belt have been seen in films whenever the star is called upon. Not you.
Well, I know this man. He's a good one.
Yeah. But whenever the star is called upon to outdraw the bad guy, this is the guy they cut to right away.
Get off me, Pat Buttram. Slim Pickens and Judy. Good night, all.
This program was recorded.